The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Portions of the following program have been pre-recorded.
I know a place where we can go to lay the troubles down, eating your soul. I know a place where mercy flows. Take the stains, make you whiter than snow. Like a tide, it is rising up deep inside a current that moves and makes you come alive. Living water that brings the dead to life.
This is Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
We're going down to the river, down to the river, down to the river to pray.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It is, of course, the program dedicated to you, where we try to ask and find answers to the questions that you care the most about. And I'm hoping that what you care about is what I care about. What does the Bible have to say about current events? What about God, the historical Jesus? How can I be saved? What does the future hold? How does the past affect the present? But every once in a while, we have authors, artists, guests who are making a difference in the kingdom of God and the body of Christ. And one such person is Dr. Jim Dennison. He can be found every day at the Dennison Forum, or you can do what I do every day as I read the Dennison Forum. I just go to ChristianHeadlines.com, and there's Jim Dennison, as big as life. And Jim Dennison, as always, thanks so much for being on the program.
Gino, so delighted to be on with you again today. Thank you for the privilege, my friend.
Well, and again, last night we had the debate. You posted at the Dennison Forum the question, who won the debate, remembering how God measures success. Let's begin there, Jim Dennison. Who won the debate?
Isn't that the question? In fact, I really kind of wondered if the headline was even an affair headline to ask, because it depends obviously on who you ask and how you define one, what you mean by that definition. If you wanted the two sides to energize their base, which is one reason people do debates and one way they measure success, then both of them probably pretty fairly did that. If you're asking if they persuaded the undecided voters, which is the other way to measure success, that jury's still out. There's a lot of polling going on about undecideds right now. Apparently only 6% of the electorate told NPR anyway that they are undecided, and a significant number of them felt that they were so discouraged by the debate they may not vote at all. And then you have to ask who that helps. So it's a whole side inside of all.
No, and it really is. And Jim, Ben Shapiro tweeted, I'll tell you who won the debate. He said the people watching lost, that they were the big losers. Because again, just what you just said, do you believe that Trump supporters, after watching this debate, will switch sides? Biden supporters, will they switch sides?
I think,
or do you think the base is intact?
Yeah, I think the base is intact. It really is, from what you see, especially on the Trump side. His enthusiasm ratings are 89 to 90%. Biden's enthusiasm ratings among Democratic voters are near 90% as well. So it would seem that both of the parties have very strongly solidified around their particular nominee, at least at this point in the process. And it's hard to know what would change their mind. I don't think the president behaved yesterday in ways that are real different from what people would expect in terms of the strength, you could call it, or the bombast, or however you'd want to look at his personality. I think Vice President Biden actually performed better than many people thought he would, relative to his coherence, his ability to stand up under the pressure, all that sort of thing. And so to that point, I suppose the Democratic side would say that their candidate showed us something we weren't sure about, whereas on the Republican side, I think the president showed us what we already knew.
I was surprised at Biden's performance, and I thought he was well coached. Now, obviously, I think that he also spoke volumes when Chris Wallace asked him the question, would you pack the Supreme Court? Just for a moment, Jim Dinesen, why is that question an important question, and what are your thoughts on Vice President Joe Biden's response?
Yeah, it's a terrific question. As regards packing the court itself, what happens if your side wins and you have the Senate, you have the presidency, you technically can do that. You can move forward toward that. The other side's going to come into power someday. And the big mistake that was made, I think, back when the Democrats moved the filibuster relative to judicial nominations is now coming back against them because now the Republicans can move forward, you know? And it goes both sides, doesn't it? So if the Democrats pack the court, then when the Republicans get back in charge, can they pack the court? Can we go from 9 to 11? Can we go to 15, which is what FDR wanted to do back in the 1930s? And where does it end? And at some point, are we using the court as a means to a political purpose when the founders intended the court to be expressly apolitical? That was the one part of our process that's why they had lifetime judges. That's why they're not elected. The whole point was that we would have some apolitical part of the process. If either side keeps packing the court, then obviously it's a partisan issue. Now, as regards whether or not the vice president should have spoken directly to that, I have a theory here. It's really kind of an interesting phenomenon as you watch these things unfold. I saw some column saying this the other day. When someone becomes president, for the first 2 years of their presidency, they usually measure it against themselves in terms of performance ratings. And after the midterms, the other side starts moving toward the next election. And now the president is measured against kind of an amorphous nominee from the other side. And the incumbent usually suffers in that comparison because that amorphous nominee, not yet an individual, doesn't have any faults. They're like the second-string quarterback that really hasn't thrown an interception, and you're measured against perfection at that point. Then the third phase is the opposition party then brings forward a candidate, and now the incumbent is measured against that candidate, and that candidate has faults. The Democrats seem to me to be staying in that second phase. They're trying to stay at a place where it's really the entire Democratic Party that the president is running against, and it seems to me that Vice President Biden is doing what he can not to take positions that will alienate people relative to his own base, whether it's stacking the court or not, whether it's taking positions that would inflame some part or the other. Seems to me they're trying to avoid taking specific positions so as not to alienate their base and so as to attract undecided voters. And if it works, then it's a brilliant strategy. If it doesn't work, then obviously we'll come back and say they should have been more definitive.
My guest is Dr. Jim Dinesen. You can always find him at the Dinesen Forum. When we come back, I am going to ask Jim Dinesen about that statement that Vice President Joe Biden made concerning his statement when asked by Chris Wallace about this leaning towards the mandate by Bernie Sanders and the sort of the socialist wing of the Democratic Party. And the vice president made the surprising statement, I am the Democratic Party. And then he made the surprising statement, I'm a private citizen and I can't call the mayor of Portland or the governor of Oregon because who am I? So when we come back, more insight from Dr. Jim Dinesen. I'll be right back.
Now, back to Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's my great privilege to have Dr. Jim Dinesen on from the Dinesen Forum on Truth and Culture. You can find him every day. If you are unfamiliar with the Dinesen Forum on Truth and Culture, you should go to the website, click on delivery for the newsletter. You can also go to christianheadlines.com and click on the Dinesen Forum Cultural Commentary, where Dr. Jim Dinesen engages in contemporary culture with biblical truth. That's why I read him every day. Dr. Jim Dinesen, welcome back.
Gino, so glad to be on with you. So grateful for the way that you analyze issues as well as discussing them. It's so much fun to be able to do this with you.
Well, one of the things that we were talking about the debate last night, and again, I want to make it perfectly clear, you do your analysis at the Dinesen Forum in an impartial way. The Dinesen Forum isn't a partisan forum. You really do make a conscientious effort to try to think carefully about what's in front of us and then ask and answer the question, how can I evaluate what I'm looking at in light of what God's word has to say? And before we went to the break, I ask you the question. Joe Biden made some interesting statements. He made the statement that when Chris Wallace asked him about this left lean towards what was called the mandate, the socialist mandate that was outlined by Bernie Sanders and the Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and tried to pin the vice president down. And the vice president made the incredible statement, I am the Democratic Party. When you heard that, what were your thoughts?
Well, my first thought was that was a brilliant move, because the thing that people have been so much saying about all of this was, if you elect Joe Biden, you're really getting Kamala Harris. You're really getting Bernie Sanders. You're really getting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. If the Senate falls to the Democrats, then you're getting Chuck Schumer as well as Nancy Pelosi. And then at that point, Joe Biden is kind of a figurehead. He's kind of a puppet, given his age, given the allegations anyway of diminished capacity. And so really, you're voting in these socialists. You're voting in these extreme left-leaning people, and he's really just kind of a figurehead to all of that. That's been one of the allegations made against his candidacy. So for him to stand up and say, look, I'm the Democratic Party today. They answer to me. I don't answer to them, is the kind of statement I think he has to make. I'm sure in the run-up to the debate, they were preparing for that line of reasoning, because that's been something that's been said along the way. But as he said that, the other question that I had was, well, his positions are in some ways in contradiction to what the party has said in its platform and what its leaders have said. So I'd be asking the question, if he can't control the Democratic Party, then can he really lead the country? I'd want to get some more alignment between the candidate and his party platform in relative to his leadership position. But nonetheless, I understand him saying that. To the degree that that's true, then for those of us that are certainly not socialists and are very concerned about 1619 Project or very concerned about critical theory, all of that, right, I'd be grateful if he's opposed to that he would not lead the country in that direction. We'll have to see how that actually turns out.
One of the other interesting things during the course of this debate, the president or Chris Wallace asked him about the ongoing riots, particularly in Oregon and most specifically in Portland. And he asked, why don't you pick up the phone, call the governor, pick up the phone, call the mayor and stop it. And you'll recall that the vice president made the statement that he's a private citizen, and he left at least me with the impression that he didn't pick up the phone, that he hasn't made that statement. What are your thoughts on his response?
Again, I was surprised by that as well, because anybody can pick up the phone and call the mayor and make a suggestion or make a plea. And certainly to the degree that all of this is hurting the Democratic Party with the undecideds that they're seeing this, because they're advocating for the demonstrators, they're therefore advocating for the rioters and all that's inside that, I could see him speaking to those that are of his party, to Democratic mayors, to Democratic governors. I could see him reaching out and saying, look, I don't have the official ability to do this. I don't have the official leverage to do this. But let me just speak to you about this, and let me encourage you on that relational level. I would have expected him to do that, would have hoped that he would do that. It seems to me anyway that they're really in a challenge, those that are very much in support of the protesters and very much in support of critical theory and all that's inside that. They don't want to be known as supporting the rioters, and Vice President Biden's made that very clear. He has consistently said rioting is wrong, rioting is illegal, rioting is hurting the cause, not helping the cause. But I think they're having to, again, balance, because they've got such a disparate platform. They've got such a disparate party. At one point, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said if they were in Europe, she and Joe Biden would never be in the same party. If you were in a country that had 17 parties, like Israel typically has in their elections or some such as that, they would never be in the same party. So he's trying to hold together this very broad coalition, doesn't want to say something that is signaling to part of the coalition something that they don't want to hear.
Now, earlier you cited an NPR source that said, you know, the Trump base will probably remain the Trump base, the Biden base will probably remain the Biden base. And now with the undecideds that many of them may or may not vote, Jim Dennison, do you think that the undecided voter who walks away from the polling place, is that going to help the president, hurt the president, help Biden, hurt Biden?
Depends on the demographics. if this was an undecided voter that would be in the demographic that would more typically support the Democratic platform than obviously helps the Republicans, and vice versa on the other side. It's thought right now, and we don't really know. We won't know till after we do the kind of postmortem after the election. But the current thinking that I'm seeing is that the undecided is not voting will hurt the Democrats more than the Republicans, only because it's thought that the undecideds tend to be younger. They tend to be more minority, and that tends to be the coalition that would support the Democrats if they voted. That tends to be the case. The older you are, the less undecided you tend to be, just demographically and typically. So that's the thinking right now, but we won't really know till after the election.
There was another aspect that was talked about in this debate, and that was the coronavirus issues. And as both of these candidates were talking about their responses to the coronavirus, I think that the people watching the debate were a little bit concerned, because even Trump supporters and Biden supporters, is it really as simple as one will open up the government and one will shut it down? Were you looking for a little bit more reasoned leadership on how to address the coronavirus issue?
Absolutely. One of the great challenges in politics is your message has to fit on a T-shirt. It's got to fit inside a tweet. It's got to be something that can easily be repeated by those that are watching the debate, that are fact-checking it, that are advancing the story, whatever. Coronavirus doesn't fit on a T-shirt. This is such a complex issue on so many levels. If you're talking about vaccine, for instance, and this was a place where both were right and both were wrong, you hear the Republican side saying we'll have a vaccine by the end of the year, because Dr. Fauci has been saying, for instance, that he is relatively optimistic there will be a vaccine by the end of the year. And then the Democratic response has been, no, your advisors are saying we won't have a vaccine until next year. Well, we may have a vaccine this year, but that doesn't mean you'll be vaccinated this year. Delivering a vaccine to 7 billion people is considered the greatest engineering feat in history. I've heard those words actually used. There are three different vaccines that are in the pipeline. Two of them must be transported in a frozen state, which makes that very difficult to distribute to the entire populace. And two of them need two shots, not just one. And so they'll probably go to the healthcare providers first, and they'll go to the at-risk population next. And so in terms of being vaccinated, that likely will be next year. In terms of having a vaccine, that may be this year. But that doesn't fit on the T-shirt. And it becomes very difficult to figure out who's saying what.
My guest is Dr. Jim Dennison. I'm so looking forward to having further conversations. Stay tuned. This is Gino Gerace. You can find Jim Dennison at the Dennison Forum.
Slowdowns along the highways and a bunch of problems. Starting down south, Castle Rock, north on I-25, slow. Getting up past Happy Canyon, that's getting better. Recovering there from a crash, mile marker 187. Heavy traffic in the tech center. That's a problem on north on I-25 just before Bellevue. An accident blocking the right lanes, and those jams back to Dry Creek. Over on the west end, an accident eastbound 70 approaching at 32nd Youngfield, and a problem on eastbound at 270 just after Vasquez. Report of a stall. I'm Susan Field.
This report is sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance, where you only pay for what you need.
Psst. Hey, you. Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance, so you only pay for what you need.
Liberty, 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 liberty. 94.7 FM, The Word.
Pastors and ministry leaders, remember our yearly pastors' gatherings? Powerful encouragement. This year, we're hosting free online virtual pastor appreciation events for you every Thursday in October with speakers like Tony Evans, John MacArthur, and Chuck Swindoll.
When is the last time you poured out your soul to God for strength?
With music by artists like Matthew West, Mandisa, and Michael W. Smith.
For complete details, go to 947FMTheWord.com.
Ah, retirement. Sounds so sweet you can almost taste it, can't you? You've been doing the right things, saving the right way, working hard, and now you're ready to start that next great journey of life. You get to do what you love, with the people you love, in places you've been dreaming about for years. Are you ready? Have you saved enough? Do you know if your money's going to last? That's where we come in. This is Colin Richards, founder of Lord and Richards. Tune in every Tuesday at 1 o'clock right here on KRKS 94.7 for the Lord and Richards Show. I'm going to take you on a journey to discover how to be financially independent sooner than you might think, and from a biblical point of view. Learn more at LordandRichards.com or call 720-372-0400. That's 720-372-0400.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC.
Parents, let's be honest. Many high school and college-age kids seem to have little direction these days. That might be true for your son or daughter. They spend a lot of time gaming, hanging with friends, but nothing seems to lead them on a path to adulthood. You may want them to go to a four-year university, but nah, their grades just don't warrant it. Their lack of passion and direction makes you wonder if a four-year university would even be a wise investment. Here's a better route to consider. The Facilities Management HVAC or Electronics Training Program, available through SalemCareerHub.com. They'll learn real-life work skills that are marketable and in high demand right now. And at SalemCareerHub.com, you can sign up for these courses at 50% off their regular price. Talk it over with your kids and get them out of the basement. They're probably as anxious as you are to move forward and just need a little push. The place to start? SalemCareerHub.com. You can also call 866-711-6275. 866-711-6275. Or SalemCareerHub.com.
Hey, my name is Pastor Josh Weidman from Grace Chapel and Gospel Daily. I hope that you're continuing to live out the gospel daily in these crazy and trying times. I know every day seems to be a little bit different than the day before, and no doubt the news will get your stomach tied in knots if you watch the many different things that are happening in our world. But listen, our hope is in Christ. He's immutable, which means that he's unchanging. He's always been the same. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is the same God we serve today. I want to invite you to come join us at church this September, either online or on campus. We're starting a new series in the book of Acts, and I can't wait to show the truth of Christ, the unchangingness of Christ, and how he was the power for the early church, who also had to live through crazy and changing times. My friends, our hope is in Jesus Christ. He's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Come join us for our new sermon series starting in the month of September. To find out more, visit gracechapel.org.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. When you turn to Rocket Mortgage, we can help guide you to those right decisions now, when they matter most. Mortgage rates are near historic lows, so now is a great time to call 8338-ROCKET. And if you need some extra money, a cash-out refinance could give you that financial boost you're looking for. Call today at 8338-ROCKET or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn more.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
It's getting harder and harder to make sense out of today's headlines. To stay on top of breaking world and national news with a Christian worldview and a faith-based perspective on what it means, turn to ChristianHeadlines.com. Log on to ChristianHeadlines.com for the very latest news, and then sign up for our free daily newsletter to stay one step ahead of what's happening. Get out of the mainstream media rut with top news and positive headlines every day with ChristianHeadlines.com.
Crosswalk with Gino Gerasi.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Gerasi. I'm so glad you could join me on the program. I do want to talk a couple more things about the debate before we move on to Amy Coney Barrett. But just quickly, Dr. Jim Dennison, a couple of things. Would you say that in this debate, Biden distanced himself from the left, or is there enough wiggle room in his responses that the left still feels confident? Obviously, they're not going to drop off or vote for Donald Trump. But were you left with the impression that he was trying to distance himself from the left, or what we might call the radical left?
That's a great question. Now, my sense of it was that he was trying to move to the middle. You always move to the middle. If you're Republican, you run to the right, then you move for the nomination, then you run to the middle for the election. And if it's the Democrats, typically you run to the left, and then for the general, you run to the middle. So he's trying to run to the middle here. And as he's doing so, I think he's trying to signal to his base that I'm not disenfranchising any of you, but you want me to get elected. You can't have influence if I don't get elected. So he, for instance, hasn't brought up the fact that he suggested to Beto O'Rourke that he could lead his efforts relative to gun control. That hasn't come up in months, but he hasn't repudiated any of that. And so if a Beto O'Rourke or somebody that wants to get the guns, as he says, thinks that he has the ability to do that, well, then he's going to lay low until Vice President Biden becomes President Biden, because only then is there the leverage to be able to do something. That sounds a little Machiavellian, but I think both sides do that. I think both candidates are trying to do that. They're trying to keep their base intact, and they're not going to say something that will lose them voters in the belief that the people that are already in their base want them to get elected and understand what they're doing.
You know, years ago, I naively thought that people went to church because of a philosophy of ministry. And I've since discovered, having been a pastor for most of my life, that people go to church and leave churches for a variety of different reasons. People vote not based on policy all the time. Sometimes people vote on something as simple as what they perceive to be a nice person or a not a nice person. And in this debate, Trump tried a few times to make an issue of Biden's son, Hunter Biden, including one especially insensitive moment when Biden was talking about his son, Beau Biden, who served honorably in the service and died of cancer. There were immediate sympathy vote, or there was a kind of a sympathy sensitivity thing going on. Do you think that the president pivoted poorly in this debate?
I think he did on several levels, unfortunately. And I'm sorry to say that. Again, as you said, our ministry is to be nonpartisan. I'm here to speak biblical truth to cultural issues as best we can do that sort of thing. But when candidates go in, obviously there's coaching, there's preparation, and there's certain pivots that they come in hoping to be able to make, certain points they're hoping to score. One of the points that the president wants to make has to do with Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. All the focus grouping that's been done, all the background demonstrates that that's a real liability for the vice president, not only because it was his son, but because some of what Hunter Biden is alleged to have done took place when Joe Biden was vice president and actually had portfolio in the parts of the world where his son was serving on these boards and was involved in these industries that he had no background for and all that sort of thing. So I think the president came in wanting to make something of that. And when Mr. Biden pivoted toward his son, Beau, I think the president heard that as an opportunity to speak to his son, Hunter, and in the heat of the moment, perhaps, didn't understand that he was really doing something that was condemning Beau when he was really trying to speak to Hunter. But nonetheless, what came across, the message that came across, certainly does not speak toward what you said in terms of why people vote for candidates. There's been a study made relative to likability going back to 1960 in presidential elections. And according to the study anyway, the most likable candidate, and they had a measure for doing this, mm-hmm. It wasn't just subjective, the most likable candidate won every election from 1960, the only exception being the year 2000 when George Bush and Al Gore tied. And look what happened in the actual vote. So
yeah,
likability is a huge factor in this, and that was a real issue last night.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about that going all the way back because you're young enough to remember Ronald mm-hmm. Reagan.
Absolutely.
And again, if you even push it back a little bit further, I remember in the early 60s watching television with my grandparents, and there's Ronald Reagan on TV in the 20 Mule Team Borax, mm-hmm. and it's impossible not to like him. He was a likable guy. Now, again, in this situation, so many people are characterizing the race as the Trump is a bad person and Joe Biden is a decent person.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that kind of dichotomy, but do you think that somehow policy is going to creep into the decision-making process?
I think it should. I absolutely think it has to. At the end of the day, if I'm getting to wave the magic wand here, I want to elect a president based on policy far more than on likability. That certainly has to do with how they can be most effective in the job as they actually get into the office and what they're actually going to do once they're in position. Unfortunately, most of us think emotionally more than we think rationally. I don't mean that in an unkind way. You know everything you know either intuitively, practically, or rationally. And most of us kind of reason intuitively. We kind of go with how things feel to us. There's kind of a primal brain that processes experience emotionally, kind of the fight or flight impulse. That's why social media so focuses on extremism and scare tactics and things such as that, because that we respond viscerally in that kind of emotive way. And if a candidate can appeal to us in that way, that's such a powerful connect that it sometimes overrides the policy-centeredness, the rationality of all of this. Now, if you have both, that's the sweet spot. Ronald Reagan had both. He had all the charisma that you're describing, but he also had a very defined worldview that he started developing even in the 1950s when he was a spokesman for GE. That never changed in terms of communism, in terms of the size of government, in terms of tax. I mean, he made that clear for decades. This is what I'm for, so I've got both policy and personality, and that's why he's typically considered one of our greatest presidents.
At your post today on who won the debate, you the other part of the title is Remembering How God Measures Success, and you talk about these are good days for compassion and love. And I couldn't help but noticing that you've repeatedly talked about society's deep divide, but also even in the midst of this deep divide, in both sides, there seems to be a hunger for meaning. Talk about that.
That's what we're made by God to need, isn't it? It was Augustine, I think, that said, our hearts are restless until they rest in him. Pascal said we have a God-shaped emptiness. We're made in God's image, and we're made for relationship with God, and that hasn't changed. No matter what's going on, the divisiveness of the day, however postmodern and relativistic our thinking is, there's still this hunger for truth, this hunger for meaning. I remember so well the time I was in the Carlsbad Caverns with a tour group, and they get you down there, then they turn off the flashlight, and it's pitch black, can't even see your hand. Then they turn a flashlight on, and you can't help instinctively turning to that light. Mm-hmm. And the light always defeats the dark. Well, that's the good news here out of John 1. Jesus is the light. The light overcomes the dark every single time. So the darker the room, the more obvious the light. The darker the room, the more powerful the light. And that's how we can reframe the challenges, the obstacles of these days as an opportunity for the gospel. The more divisive the culture, the more we stand out when we're compassionate. The more people oppose us and try to cancel us, the more we stand out when we respond by speaking the truth in love. So I'm hoping believers during this election season will see this divisiveness as an incredible opportunity to be different and to hold forth the word of life, as Philippians says, and do it in a way that makes all the difference in the world.
Well, let's make a transition just for a moment, because this makes me think about Amy Coney Barrett. It was Catherine Jean Lopez who said, in a sane world, America would have fallen in love with the Barrett family. She says, after all, Amy Coney Barrett's scholarly brilliance is recognized by legal minds on both the left and the right. She's a mom with seven children, including two adopted from Haiti. Her youngest child has Down syndrome and is the favorite of everyone in the family. She revealed in a truth said in jest when she accepted her nomination that her family loves their Down syndrome child. And again, in a sane world, you would think that she would be a perfect candidate, but she's being vilified, not just simply because she was nominated by this president. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Jim Dennison a little bit about his thoughts on the nomination and what's ahead. You don't want to miss it. And remember, you can find more at the Dennison Forum.
A lot of traffic out and about, busy out here. The I-25 corridor crash in the tech center. This is northbound I-25 approaching Bellevue. In the right lanes, northbound I-25 jam from C-470 up to Bellevue. That's about a 10-minute delay. You're going to find it slow northbound I-25 from Washington into downtown. I'm Susan Field.
Psst. Hey, you. Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance, so you only pay for what you need.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
94.7 FM, The Word.
The groundbreaking advanced FUE treatment from Advanced Hair Restoration is finally here in Denver. Some of you might have a receding hairline or thinning hair, or if you're lucky, a bald spot. Well, we no longer have to travel to Seattle or LA to get the very best in hair restoration. Advanced Hair's team has a decade of experience using state-of-the-art technology that will grow your natural hair back 100% guaranteed. The treatment is simple, pain-free, and takes just one day. The research is sound, and with Advanced Hair, you always have and always will receive the very highest standard of care, well beyond CDC guidelines. So be one of the first to schedule a free virtual or in-person consultation and get special financing, 250 free hair grafts, and $250 off. Just call 720-459-HAIR. We finally have access to the best team and technology in hair restoration right here in Denver. Call 720-459-HAIR or become inspired with before and afters at advancedhair.com.
Hi, my name is Ryan Bourne.
And I'm Danica Bourne.
And we're the owners of South Coast Tax. We would like to thank our Lord for protecting us from evil. Psalm 91 states, He is my refuge and my fortress, for He will rescue us from every trap and protect us from deadly disease.
South Coast Tax are Christian-based tax accountants and attorneys who specialize in releasing bank levies, wage garnishments, and filing complex tax returns. We are the leaders in acceptance of offers and compromise with awesome results.
We are also a small firm. We'll treat you like family and not just a number.
Call us today at 1-800-TAX-1176 for a free consultation, and we'll take the time to explain all of the programs that you qualify for in order to allow you a fresh start.
In John 8:36, so if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. And one way we can achieve that is by being debt-free. So let us help you today. Call us at 1-800-TAX-1176, and together we can help achieve this goal by putting the IRS tax debt behind you for good. Again, that number is 1-800-TAX-1176.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshares. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, well, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, founder and CEO of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. And the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sounds crazy, right? Well, the crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-384-3434. 800-384-3434. 800-384-3434.
Where are we headed? Globalism? A new world order? A singular government power?
If we yield over and decide that America is not unique, it's not special, it's not extraordinary, we no longer are the United States of America. We're just a piece of a bigger government.
And what about prophecy? Is the United States of America part of God's great plan for the world? Now, a new documentary, Trump 2024, The World After Trump, takes a look at what the world could look like in 2024, with or without President Trump. Trump 2024 features interviews with Franklin Graham, Mike Huckabee, Dennis Prager, and yours truly, Eric Metaxas.
The Messiah will not arrive on Air Force One.
Watch Trump 2024, The World After Trump on SalemNow.com. That's SalemNow.com. Trump 2024.
Go to SalemNow.com and watch Trump 2024. That's SalemNow.com. And watch Trump 2024. That's SalemNow.com.
Hey, this is Pastor Ed from Calvary Church in Aurora, and I want to encourage you to take a minute and get the free Calvary Church app. On it, you'll find our live stream services, weekly messages, the Lead to Serve podcast, ways to connect with us, and information about our church, plus so much more. Just go to your app store and search Ed Taylor or Calvary Church, download it, turn on notifications, and we'd love to stay connected with you. Get the free Calvary Church app today.
Denver's 94.7 FM, The Word. Listen live at radio.com.
This is Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
Your name is powerful, your words unstoppable, all things are possible.
Hey, welcome back. It's been my great privilege to have Dr. Jim Dennison on this hour. We've been trying to process what we saw with the debates, and I'm now asking him about the president's putting forth Amy Coney Barrett as a justice nominee, and she's going to go through this process. Before we went to the break, Jim, I talked a little bit about Catherine Jean Lopez, who basically said, in a sane world, people will look at this woman and say, what's not to love? And yet there seems to be a growing critique, and that the critique isn't just a difference of opinion, but a kind of an animosity. I know you've written a lot on civil discourse. Give us your thoughts on this candidate and what she may or may not look forward to in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually writing on this for tomorrow and for Friday as well. It's just such a fascinating story to me. And what we're looking at here, what's happening in the Senate right now, the senators that are not meeting with her because they consider the whole process to be in so many ways something they can't support, all the stuff that's inside that. But really, to me, there are three things that are inside this. The first piece has to do with her remarkable capacities. And I don't want people to miss that in the course of this conversation, what people are thinking about with her. I mean, her professor at Notre Dame said she was the finest student he ever had.
High praise.
Among the people, yeah. I mean, the people that clerked with her for Supreme Court justices said that she was by far the best person in the group. And these are liberals as well as conservatives. This
right.
is Noah Feldman with the New York Times saying she's eminently qualified. I could see her as a chief justice at some point. I mean, I absolutely believe that she could be the leading light on the conservative side of the court as that comes forward. She's so good at building consensus. She's mm-hmm. got such grace as well as absolute brilliance. So that's one piece of it. A second piece is her family story, which is so unique in this day. She's got adoption. She's up. You think about abortion. Two-thirds of Down syndrome children are aborted in this country. 95% in Scandinavia are aborted. For them to choose to keep this child and for this child to be the favorite of the family, as they've said, the family story is so. Mm-hmm. In fact, she's called a Walmart soccer mom. She drives a minivan. She's engaged wow. in soccer practice. She drives an hour and 45 minutes each way to get to work so that she can stay in her house. They do tailgating in South Bend at the Notre Dame games. She would three times was chosen the finest professor in all of Notre Dame
wow.
by her students. So there's the family and the personal stuff inside all of this. And then the third piece is the part that you've already alluded to. In a perfect world, she would absolutely be one of those 98 to nothing nominees,
right.
as opposed to someone who's probably going to maybe get 51, 52 votes, just depending on the partisan nature. That says a lot more about us and our divided culture than it says about her.
Yeah, some of the critiques have been uncharitable. That's not even a strong enough word, evil. Some tweeted that she adopted children from Haiti because secretly the Barrett family are white supremacist colonizers. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, you've lived in a world where you talk about balanced and measured. Your ministry is known as balanced and measured. How do you respond from this kind of hyper criticism over a good and decent human being?
It is so difficult, isn't it? I remember reading the autobiography of William Barclay some years ago. His daughter drowned in a horrible sailing accident. And he got letters afterwards from critics saying that God killed his daughter because of Barclay's liberal theology.
Wow.
And Barclay in his autobiography said the inevitable flash of anger and emotion was there as a human. But then once he got past that, he came to pity the people who would go to such lengths to make a point that was so obviously evil. And I feel that way about this. If somebody wants to come into someone who took two children out of Haiti, which is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and wanted to give them a new life in this country, for them to stoop with absolutely no evidence of any kind, with no justification of any kind, what they're saying about these two children who are old enough to know this is happening about them, and what they're saying about this, what I think they're ultimately trying to do is inflame their own base. They're not going to change her position. They're not going to change their family. What they're trying to do is make points with the people that read their tweets and follow. They want to be in this conversation. They want to be part of all of this. No such thing as bad news, kind of vibe. No such thing as bad publicity. So they're really wanting to signal to their own supporters that they're willing to speak truth to power. And that's to their good in their mind. And so when I get behind their motives, I understand them a little better, but that makes them no less sad.
Yeah, it is so interesting to me that some of the critiques have been, it's just straight out anti-religious bigotry.
Yes.
As if Catholics who believe what Catholics have always believed are disqualified from public service. Now, again, this, I'm wondering from your position, how is this going to set with the American people in the weeks ahead? Do you see this vast – I was thinking about this. The average age in America right now, Jim Dennison, is 38 years old.
Mm-hmm.
People are older. People are younger. Do you think most of America is going to look at this process and say, enough?
That's what I'm hoping. In fact, we're already seeing some of that. Nancy Pelosi today – started signaling, and she's herself Catholic, of course, and Joe Biden is Catholic, started signaling we do not want to be critiquing her Catholicism. That was done back in 2017 with Senator Feinstein when she said the dogma lives large in you. And right. That turned actually into a mantra that got made into T-shirts and mugs and such as that. It was really a mistake. So I, quite frankly, will be surprised if critique is centered on a religion per se. What you're going to see people try to do is try to pin her on specific issues like Roe v. Wade or the Accountable Care Act, which she shouldn't go to because she shouldn't be speaking on specific things that could come before the court. They never do. She shouldn't do that. They're going to try to do that, and they're going to try to shape the Senate. I don't think they think they can win this. I think what they think they can do is signal to their base for the election, this is why we need Democrats, not Republicans, because if Republicans are in charge, this is what we get. That's at the end of the day. It's all about the election. It's not about her. They have the votes, apparently. It's apparently about the fall election and what they can do to inflame their base to make certain the Republicans don't keep nominating to the court.
Yeah, and I think about precedent, and I think it's hard for me to forget the Dred Scott decision and mm-hmm. how wrong the court got it. And the Dred Scott decision was never overturned. It was never legally overturned by the right. court. It was rather a civil war was fought and an amendment to the Constitution was made. And nobody knows better than you how deeply polarizing the Roe v. Wade decision has been. But it seems almost now it's at the point of being irrational as people would poison a candidate like that simply because they believe what the Bible has to say about the dignity of being a human being.
Mm-hmm. And we're at that place, aren't we? Abortion has poisoned our politics on so many levels across so many places, and it's an example of what the court got wrong again. They made the Constitution a living document. They discovered a right to abortion that clearly doesn't exist in the Constitution, did the same thing with same-sex marriage. And that's why the court is so politicized today and why people are so worried about it, because they're able to get legislative battles won there that they can't get through legislators. Abortion would never have been legalized by a Congress. That could have never happened, so they brought it through the courts. Well, that's what's happening to the court today, and we need to get back to a place, and Judge Barrett is absolutely there, as was Judge Scalia, a place where it's the original intent of the document is what matters. We're not here to make laws. We're here to interpret laws. I have great hope that that will be the case for the federal legislature as well as for the Supreme Court in years ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that you do at today's Denison Forum on your posting today, you basically you make a couple of points, but one of the points you make is that tragedy and hatred are opportunities for compassion and love. In the last few moments, you talk about the more acrimonious our country becomes, the more urgent and powerful our ministry comes. Let's close with that. Talk to that.
Yeah, thank you. I was able to quote something I read every day from the Society of St. John the Evangelist. It's a group up in Boston, and they have a little blog they put out every day, and this quote meant so much to me. Fear is not a sign of the absence of God. In our fear, we rather find the bidding presence of God. Our fear most often arises out of something bigger than we are. We find that in and of ourselves, there's not enough. We come up short, so we bring the fear to God. Let's reframe the fear as an opportunity for faith. Let's reframe opposition as an opportunity for the gospel. Let's see when people demonstrate hate and we demonstrate love, that love always wins. And let's turn this vitriolic, difficult day as a chance for the gospel in our lifetime. God put us in this time for such a time as this. Let's seize the moment.
I so appreciate you. I so appreciate all that you're doing. You can find out more. Please visit www.denisonforum.org, denisonforum.org. You know, Jim Denison, I had John MacArthur on years ago. I made the statement, you know, I don't agree with everything you say, but I can't afford to ignore anything you say. Mm. Well, Jim Denison, I agree with almost everything you say every time. So your head must be in a right place.
We must be right. We agree, so we must be right.
Oh, www.denisonforum.org. Thanks so much for being my guest.
God bless. So grateful to be back, my friend. Take care.
This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me. Guess what? In the next hour, I'm going to be taking your calls, answering your questions. Make sure you write down the number, 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. We're going to be talking about a couple of things in the headlines, including Nevada to vote on a bill removing the definition of marriage as being between a man and a woman. And of course, 46% of white evangelicals backing Biden say their close friends are voting for Trump. This according to a Pew Research poll. We're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to call me on the program.
KRKS FM, Lafayette, Denver, Boulder. 94.7. This is Denver's 94.7 FM, The Word. Part of the Salem Media Group.